The Pat Kenny Show.
With the Jaguar E-Pace. Beautiful by design and dynamic to drive. Delivering performance that is unmistakably Jaguar.
This is News Talk.
We're going to talk about females in power. 50% of the Irish population is female, so why does our government not reflect that fact? And with the general election upon us, perhaps there is the opportunity to change that balance in Leinster House. To talk about their various party proposals, some of the women who are seeking election, Fine Gael TD for Dublin Bay South, Kate O'Connell, Social Democrats TD for Dublin North West and the party's co-leader Roisin Shortall, Sinn Féin TD for Dublin Fingal, Louise O'Reilly, Fianna Fáil TD for Mayo and spokesperson on Brexit, Lisa Chambers, who is on the telephone, and also in studio with me, Senator Pippa Hackett of the Green Party, a candidate in Laois Offaly. You're all very welcome to the programme. We'll hark back to that debate on two fronts. We'll talk about the Sinn Féin issue in a moment with Louise, but the drugs issue, because a number of people saying I should never have asked the question and other people saying it was an interesting moment. So I'll ask you all, I mean, have you ever taken recreational drugs, Kate?
When I was in university, I took or smoked some cannabis, but I've never taken a chemical synthetic drug. I'm a pharmacist by profession and fully understand the difficulties, but also in terms of, you know, the safety aspect. So I suppose I'm coming at it from a slightly different perspective. I suppose I've worked with people in addiction in my earlier jobs down in the Midlands, and my first job was in Brighton, which had a huge drug problem 15 years ago. So I'm fully aware of the impact of drugs on communities and young people. And in terms of our work through Fine Gael, it has been a topic of discussion at the parliamentary party since I've been elected in terms of a health-led approach to drug addiction. But also,
do you think it's normal though for people of your generation that most people have tried weed at some point, and if they say otherwise, they're probably fibbing? Is that your view?
I don't know, because you can't generalise. I mean, certain people just, you know, do different things. But I do know that, and I think we all know that, the use of cheap recreational MDMA with very low quality in terms of safety, and we've seen the tragic deaths, and that's forming a huge part of the social scene now. And I'm told that there is a preference now it's a movement away from alcohol to drug use.
Okay, we'll go around the table anyway.
And there doesn't seem to be, and Pat, just to finish, there doesn't seem to be that knowledge there of the dangers and the risks.
But it's about your personal response, and we've got yours, but also a lot of rationale. Pippa?
Yeah, I was at university in the 1990s, and I would have smoked some cannabis. I mean, there were people around me who would have, you know, taken acid and maybe ecstasy towards the later stages, but I never, you know.
Okay, Lisa Chambers on the telephone. Lisa?
Yeah, good morning, Pat. No, I haven't. I mean, I have a particular thing with smoking in general. I never even smoked cigarettes, just really had a dislike to it from a very young age. So it just wasn't for me. But, you know, I think, you know, in terms of the word recreational, that we really need to address this normalization of, you know, drug use as being recreational.
Okay, but I mean, the reality is that it's there. These guys are not getting their money, you know, by extortion. They're getting it from people who willingly buy these drugs, and they buy them in a recreational context. They're out for a night.
Of course. So the point I'm trying to make, Pat, is that we do normalize it to a certain extent that, oh, you know, when you're younger, that, you know, if you do some drugs at the weekend, partying, that's somehow okay because you won't do it when you're older and working. I think we just need to do a little bit more around education to tell younger people that when you do this,
I just wanted to get to the point, first of all, you are clean, and I always have been. This is your point. Louise?
Well, Pat, my time in university was no different to anyone else's in many respects. However, at the age of 21, I was a mother, which put a halt very effectively to any gallop I might have had an interest in. My mind was on other things, balancing childcare and child rearing and being a mom. But when I was in my first year in college, yes, I smoked cannabis. I think a lot of my peers did. But, you know, I think when you use phrases like you just did, are you clean? are you not? I think we need to have an open and honest conversation, you know, not just about drug use, but about recreational drug use and also about harm reduction and a health-led approach to addiction.
So I was in college in the 70s. The main drug of choice was alcohol at that point. And certainly I did participate in that recreation to a significant extent. And it's important to bear in mind that alcohol is still the main substance that is abused
but,
among
but
young
people. But you didn't smoke weed
there was
in,
very
in college.
Little. There was very little around. I would have known very few people who did smoke weed. But I also think there's an important point to make. The kind of weed that was around in the 70s and 80s was infinitely lighter and less potent than the current.
I mean, Chris Luke, who was on earlier with us talking about the coronavirus, makes that point again and again, that it's 15, 20 times more powerful than...
Yeah, sure. But I'd also make the point, Pat, that I don't think it especially matters whether somebody smoked a few joints or not when they
Boris
were younger.
Johnson snorted something we don't know what.
Sure,
and he says he doesn't know what. Michael Gove has admitted when he was outed on cocaine.
Yeah, I also think it's important that we don't get hung up on this. So what if, you know, lots of people tried weed when they were younger. We need to look at why it is that now we continue to have a major problem, cultural problem, with alcohol misuse, other drugs, the strength of the current weed, but also what we're seeing now, the big challenge is the use of cocaine and crack cocaine in particular. It is available everywhere.
Okay,
and
the point I was putting to the leaders last night, and put it to you all, the sense that people who do consume these drugs on a Friday, Saturday night don't seem to realise that directly or somewhat indirectly they have blood on their hands.
Well, they're certainly contributing to the high levels of crime and drug-related crime, gangland feuds and all of that. They're the customers in this business that give rise to that level of serious crime and the kind of appalling atrocities we've seen in recent weeks.
I mean,
weeks.
You can look at Narcos on the telly and you can say, well, okay, somehow indirectly consumers of cocaine in Dublin are responsible for narco-terrorism and murders down there. But you don't have to go that far anymore.
Absolutely.
You can look locally and see the effects.
Yeah. And the impact on communities and working class communities in particular, I think, is being felt. I know I've talked to people in Balbriggan and they have an issue, particularly with with drug misuse in the town, but also with the way in which younger people are being brought into it. Now, Balbriggan is a fantastic town and it's a great place to live, but they need resources. You need to have a visible Garda presence, but you also need to be resourcing organisations like Feroiga, like Jigsaw, to ensure that you're getting in there at an early age and telling kids it's not glamorous. And parents also, if your kids are coming home and they have a Gucci hat or a Gucci handbag, or they have the, I don't even know the name of the designer sliders, you don't know where their money is coming from. Sit them down and ask them some questions.
And it's interesting. I mean, I come from my area is Leash Offaly and I live in the middle of pretty much nowhere. But it was surprising to me, to be quite honest, to find out how prevalent, you know, drug availability is, and even in villages. You know, I would have thought, no way, it's all a big town.
You'd imagine
thing.
Though that in villages that the movers and shakers in that regard would be very visible. You know, you can hide in the cities as a supplier. Harder to hide in
the
rural areas.
Made up of smaller communities as well, and I think, you know, and it's not like it's not good enough to just say, oh well, we know X and Y is at it or X and Y is involved. What we need to do is we need to have Garda resources so that they can go in and actually tackle it. That's essential.
I fully believe that the solution here is education and a health led harm reduction approach.
But the evidence wouldn't point to that case.
I think you have to question as to why people embark on a route like this. I think Louise hit an interesting point there. The tragedy recently of the child that was groomed and brought into this trade, I feel, you know, as if, you know, the clothes they were wearing, the aspirations that young man had or that young boy had, and that I just think that society failed him. I think we all failed him, and we can't just, you know,
but he had
pull
been engaged
it.
with the services. You know, it wasn't that no one was trying.
I'm not saying that. Be providing viable alternatives
absolutely.
For kids. If that happened,
that is a failure to my mind. But I think the key, and I look back to my own teens, and I have a sister that's 10 years older than me, a medical doctor, and I remember she showed us brain scans of people post-high drug use. Now, I still don't know to this day if they were genuine scans, but she terrified the life out of us and also, I suppose, told us about the people that are producing okay. this, that they've no regard for human life.
Okay, I want to go to Lisa because she is not visible to us being on the telephone. Lisa, that question of, you know, the people who supply in Mayo as well as anywhere else and what to do?
Yeah, I mean, there will be a feeling that if you go back to the 70s and 80s and even the 90s, that drug use and harder drugs were predominantly a problem in the bigger cities, that it wasn't really an issue in rural Ireland. And certainly the feeling that I would get across Mayo and talking to communities, they feel as though the countryside is awash with drugs, that smaller towns and villages now have a major problem. And we would have heard statistics during the week that children as young as 14 now are using drugs, which I think is a shocking statistic for anybody to listen to. And I don't know, I mean, I think one of the panellists might have mentioned earlier that there is a move away from alcohol and, you know, that we have been trying to change our culture around that. But then I wonder, are younger people turning to drugs as something else to use on that night out? And I would agree with Kate and others.
Unintended consequences again, yeah.
But absolutely, but you know, we're dealing with younger people that are finding their way in the world. They're growing up. They're, you know, they want to go out and enjoy themselves. And I do think the message has to go out that if you buy drugs, even for recreational purposes, even if it's only once or twice in the year, that you are contributing to that demand. If there was no demand for these drugs, then
now,
the gangs wouldn't
to go
be,
back to,
wouldn't
to,
be
to Roisin. This, you were taking issue with Kate's notion that education is going to lead.
If you're talking about a cohort of people that are kind of doing well, you know, they have options in life, they're heading, you know, they're coming out from maybe a private school and going on to college, and that's kind of set out for them. Well, fine, you educate them about that. There is a problem, though, in many working class communities in particular, where we've got very close to a tipping point where young people have very few options, mm-hmm. and where there's a huge problem with young people who feel that maybe life isn't offering them much, being sucked into the drugs trade. Mm-hmm. And the gang lords, you know, are taking this approach. They take the view that children, if you're under 18, you're fairly well untouchable by the criminal justice system. And we have young people then being sucked in. As Louise said there, it looks very attractive. If you don't have many options in life, you know, if you're suffering from educational disadvantage and you see your friends, you see other guys around the community seemingly doing well, getting money, getting free drugs. This is an option for people now in many working class communities.
I'm fully aware of that.
And, you know, there's a problem with that. We need to invest in those communities, ensuring that young people have alternatives. But we also need to ensure that there is actually a criminal justice system response to it. Education in those circumstances is not effective.
What is the criminal justice system? Because we've heard from, say, Jimmy Gearn, Veronica Gearn's brother, internment.
Yeah,
you know, take them off the streets. That's the first thing you do. But nature abhors a vacuum, and
sure,
you suspect that others will move in.
What I'm saying, Pat, is there's a need for a very strong criminal justice response. To the main kind of dealers involved, the big time dealers. But we also need a lower level response at community level. I mean, the whole idea of the community guard.
People know in these areas, they know who's responsible for all sorts of
things.
But
they do. But
the guards will say, "We have no evidence. We'd love to pick them up and lock them up."
Can I just make this point, Pat? Yes. That's at the high level, the big time dealers. But what's happening at community level is that there are thousands of young people being sucked into this, becoming runners for the drugs trade, and they are seen to be untouchable. What I'm saying is the whole idea in the community guard the service is that you have preventative policing. So where you start off with a 9 or 10 year old hanging around the street corner, you know, getting involved in petty stuff, antisocial activity, it's at that point that there needs to be an intervention. But I was looking at the figures.
But I'm saying, where is the parent? If a 10 year old is hanging around on the street corner dealing drugs or becoming a runner,
but Pat, what I'm saying is you have to stop these areas becoming a seedbed for more serious crime. And the way you do that is having the numbers. The numbers of the community guard service have been halved by the last two governments.
And community policing is absolutely essential. Gardaí, a visible Gardaí presence. I mean, we need to increase the number of Gardaí. We know that. We all know that. Sinn Féin wants to increase that number to 16,000. But we also need to make it known that young people, for these vicious thugs who are terrorising our communities, young people are disposable and expendable, and that is what happens. So there is education is important, and people need to understand that. But we need visible policing on our streets.
There's one issue that Sinn Féin a bit equivocal on, that's the Special Criminal Court non-jury trials because of witness intimidation and so on. The Gardaí having difficulty finding evidence. Have you done, as was suggested last evening, a U-turn on the special criminal
court?
Okay, so
what we want to see is particularly because we feel it in our communities, okay, and we can see the impact of these thugs. We hear it on the news, but when it's not on the news, we're seeing it every day of the week in Sinn Féin. So as far back as 2017, my colleague Jonathan O'Brien has said it in the Dáil, and I think every year since we have said we want a comprehensive review of all of the judicial options that are available, and that needs to happen.
But in the meantime, use the special criminal court?
The response to that review, obviously, we will take on board. But, you know, as it happens, the Gardaí don't have sufficient numbers. We need to have these people off of our streets.
I want to go back to the special criminal court, because people would say, you know, the nature of the threat in Ireland has changed from paramilitary threat to a crooked, you know, the gangs and so on. And that your disaffection with the special criminal court was due to the fact that so many of the paramilitary wing of the Republican movement were facing trial in the special criminal court. And that's where your rooted objection to it is. But when it moves towards the civilian area...
That civil liberties bodies also have problems with non-jury courts. But this, we need a 21st century response to these 21st century criminals. And what we don't have at the moment, visible policing, the ability to take these people off of our streets and out of our communities.
Lisa Chambers, special criminal court to deal with the drugs, internment perhaps?
I mean, look, Pat, the Special Criminal Court was established, as all of the panellists will know, to deal with the very worst of criminals because of intimidation of jury members. You know, I would be quite concerned that Sinn Féin are not in a position today with just over 2 weeks to polling to tell the public that they support the Special Criminal Court. When we look at the depravity of the murders in Drogheda, what happened to that young man in Cork, we can see that gangland crime is increasing and that gangs are becoming more sophisticated. Now, just because we have 21st century crime, doesn't mean that it's not crime. It needs to be dealt with swiftly and properly.
I just go around the table.
The reason the court was established in the first place, it has done its job and it has done its job well. And I think Sinn Féin need to be a lot more clear on their position. Simply reviewing
it, ideal world, I don't think non-jury court. The threat from the drugs trade at the moment is such that I don't believe it should be abolished at this point. Okay. We need to tackle that problem.
It's Fine Gael policy for criminal court to exist and to continue.
Okay, and Pippa?
I think we would agree with that, yeah.
All right, we'll take a pause, and after the break we'll talk lots more about the various issues, including last night's leaders' debate and the perception that Sinn Féin were
The Pat Kenny Show.
With the Jaguar E-Pace. Beautiful by design and dynamic to drive. Delivering performance that is unmistakably Jaguar.
This is News Talk.
A comment here. The whole world is fighting the war with drugs for generations and it's failing. The only resolution is to decriminalise soft drugs and free the Gardaí resources to catch the big guys. Just look at Canada or some states in the US for perfect examples. I think the debate is still ongoing and the jury is out. Kieran says, I'd just like to say it's a pleasure to listen to a group of female politicians having a constructive conversation about this issue. Now, we want to talk about last night's debate. Louise, I have to go to you first in terms of Sinn Féin being talked about in the context of coalition formation in the absence of Sinn Féin. But both parties nailed their colours to the mast before that debate. And I put it to them that, you know, Sinn Féin has an electoral mandate. Why should they be excluded? And you know their arguments. You're not a normal political party.
Oh, that's awful silly. And I really think that that's something that doesn't resonate with people. It's disrespectful to people who vote for Sinn Féin, to the people who I hope are going to support me in Dublin, Fingal and right across the constituencies who come out and cast their vote. It's also a little bit disingenuous for the two lads. And that's what it was. It was two lads having a chat last night, two men who agree fundamentally on most things, having a little chat, and you know they excluded the leader of the third largest party in the state. For reasons that people are saying to me on the doors, it's like, are they afraid of her? Do they not want to have the debate? It was a chat. You know, you need opposition.
Well, the
you
debate was framed as the two potential candidates for Taoiseach based on the numbers in the current Dáil. There's no way that Mary Lou, under the current numbers, and that's how they frame these things, could be leading a government with.
And I think the makeup of the next Dáil is going to be very, very interesting. And I also think think that, you know, to exclude the leader of the third largest party in the state, who effectively has led the opposition in the Dáil, let's be honest, because Confidence and Supply has taken the, who Fianna Fáil could have been an opposition party, but they were in agreement. So we've had four men who have agreed a budget. We have two men who have agreed four budgets, who have agreed on policy, who have agreed to support each other and ensure that, that you know, okay, that one of them is kept in
Roisin
power. To exclude Mary Lou, I feel, was very, very wrong.
Mary
but that's
Lou
also what
led
people
the
are
opposition.
Saying.
How do you feel about that? Would you concur?
Well, they're the biggest non-government party, if you take Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael as the government, the outgoing government parties. You know, that doesn't mean she necessarily leads the opposition. They are the biggest grouping.
She's the leader of the largest party of opposition.
That's true. And look, absolutely, as far as I'm concerned, if somebody gets elected, they get other TDs elected, they have a mandate.
Would you be happy to form a leftist group with Mary Lou as the leader of that group?
Well, look,
because that's the only way that...
It's far too early to talk about the possibility of that. I spoke to you last week,
Pat. Anybody else, Roisin.
I spoke to you last week, Pat, about the potential for something, some other grouping there. And certainly if you look at the polls from recent days, you know, you have a block in Fine Gael, you have a block in Fianna Fáil, and the other block, the kind of centre-left block, is actually bigger than either of those. Now, I would like to see that happening soon, that you would have some kind of, you know, a progressive platform there of other parties that are progressive.
But you'd have to have a leader.
Parties.
Now, in your party, in fairness, in your party, you have difficulty having a leader. You know, you have two co-leaders,
yeah,
so you can't even make up your mind as to who should be the leader.
Absolutely well, and you know,
okay,
we're a new
so
party.
Would you be looking to be a co-leader with Mary Lou of such a leftist block?
Things like that are up for discussion after an election. Right, we're not going to go there at this point. I would like to see a progressive left government. There is potential for that. I don't see it happening in this election, but I think it will happen very soon, potentially in the next
election.
I want
to go to Lisa. Lisa, that business of Sinn Féin never being a coalition partner of Fianna Fáil, even if the numbers do stack up, you get 60 seats, Sinn Féin have 25, 60 plus 25, 85, current, comfortable working majority. That might prove very attractive to Fianna Fáil TDs?
Well, look at that. I mean, we've been asked this question I don't know how many times at this stage over the last number of years. It was a constant topic for debate in the run-up to 2016 and every year since, and it's been ramped up again for this election. Our party position remains unchanged, utterly unchanged. It has never moved. We will not be coalescing with Sinn Féin. And Micheál Martin on the debate last night reiterated that point.
Yeah.
And I know the conversation is that, you know, Sinn Féin is being talked about, but the media keep asking the question, so obviously we have to continue
Lisa, I'll tell you why I asked that question, because I remember Desi O'Malley and Charlie Haughey being arch enemies, not in the affable way that Micheál Martin and Leo Varadkar were affable enemies last night. There was vitriol and hatred and a fundamental disagreement with each other. They despised each other, and yet, coalition. So,
well,
you know, I never say never in politics because I've seen it happen.
All
I can point to is what happened after 2016. We said we wouldn't coalesce with Sinn Féin and we didn't. That's evidence.
He's also said
there's no vitriol,
the here,
there's
so
no
you know,
hatred.
So.
There's no deep distrust or anything of that nature. But the point, I think a very recent example of why Sinn Féin is not like any other political party, if you look at the Cash for Ash scandal in the North, and you look at Sinn Féin's finance deputy, Martin O'Mwelo, if you look to Burned by Sam McBride, it says that in that book, he had to consult with unnamed, unelected officials within his party or the Corla before he, as Minister for Finance, could take a decision. And that's a clear example, a very recent example, as to why we cannot work with Sinn Féin and government in the Republic, because they are not an ordinary political party.
But you're happy for us to be in government in the North, Lisa, is that right?
Well, Northern Ireland is a different space, Louise, and you know, I'm sure you'll argue that when you're advocating for pension
island,
increases
Lisa,
in the North
and, you know,
and not
I mean,
in the
is
Republic,
a little bit disingenuous
then it's very
for
different,
you to talk out of both sides of your mouth continuously to say we must be in government in the North, but we may not be in government. That's a decision for the people.
Oh, okay, well, that's a point
Louise,
we can put
you
point.
And we're people not, in your party well, to constantly put down our voters in that way. It is absolutely disrespectful.
My mandate that
I went in with in 2016 is just as valid as anybody else's.
Let's see, I want to go to Kate as well because her party takes a similar view. Yes, Lisa.
For first of all, we are not putting down Sinn Féin voters, and we do respect the electorate. We are not saying Sinn Féin cannot be in government. What we're saying is that they will not be in government with us. We will not coalesce with them. That is our choice as our, for our party, okay. And we are perfectly entitled to take that position.
Kate O'Connell, I mean, your party leader made the same remark that Sinn Féin are not a normal political party.
Well, leaving that aside, in terms of policy, our direction would be completely different. So I do not understand how we could ever coalesce with Sinn Féin, because there is such difference in our policies that I can't see how we could agree to form a coalition. But that said, you know, there is a significant vote there for Sinn Féin at the minute, and perhaps that will continue. But the job of government is to represent all people, those who voted for them and those who didn't vote for them. So I just cannot see how it will work out on paper, any sort of coalition. And that said, Fine Gael members up and down the country have absolutely no time for Fine Gael going into any sort of coalition with Sinn Féin. So it is the party position very clearly that under no circumstances.
Pippa,
and you do refer to the Desi O'Malley Charlie situation. I do think there's within, and you almost trivialised the relationship between Micheál and Leo Varadkar. There is a huge swathe of us within the Fine Gael parliamentary party that ran because of the destruction of Ireland by Fianna Fáil, and I would find it, I suppose, I see them as completely differently. Of Radker and Micheál Martin, but in terms of Sinn Féin,
Charlie High and Desi O'Malley didn't want to be in the same room as each other. That's how bad it was. That is not the case with Micheál Martin and Leo Varadkar. Pippa, the Green Party is characterised with, as long as we get the Green agenda, should we go in with anyone? Is that fair?
Well, I mean, I think we're being, you know, as it said, we're going to wait and see. We're going to read the party manifestos. Clearly, for the Green Party, you know, strong environmental policies from any party is going to be important for us if we're to consider going into any sort of government formation. I mean, and that'll filter through all the policies. It's not just greenwashing, which we've seen a plenty of over the last 5 or 10 years. And, you know, the governments can, you know, they walk, they talk the talk, but are they walking the walk? I don't think so.
But the Green Party, I mean, you do, in your title even, really state what you are.
Well,
you have the Green agenda. Now, you obviously, in government, you have other problems
absolutely,
to solve,
but
everything is informed by the Green agenda.
It is, but that filters through every single policy that we have. So whether it's transport, whether it's energy, housing, agriculture, that is the core to formation of our policies. So it's not just, oh, we're all about biodiversity and nothing else. It isn't that. It's the core is of environmentalism filters through all our policies. And we need to see that in other parties.
If the green surge happens, you could be kingmakers.
Yes.
If you do get, you know, 12, 13 seats, you could be vital component. The last time the Greens went into government with Fianna Fáil, they got decimated the next time out. I mean, are you fearful at all that that is your fate, just to be there, be the mudguard for a bigger party and then get rejected?
Look, there's always that risk. I mean, a smaller party in any coalition is always going to come out worse, you know, but we are all running, our candidates are all running with the intent of forming a government, because you can do, you know, whatever you can do outside of government on the opposition benches, inside on a government, around the government table, you're going to have far more. And we need to drive that whole environmental agenda.
I think an important consideration for any party considering entering government is whether the approach of that government is the right one or not. Yeah. It's not about getting kind of crumbs from the table or individual policies implemented. You know, it is about a whole approach by government, ensuring that we have good quality public services, that they're sustainable, all of those things, that they're all connected.
Yes.
I mean, as we say, there's no point in kind of, you know, the front of the train going in one direction and then the smaller parties in government at the back of the train going in a different direction.
I remember very well the Fianna Fáil Green coalition. I remember they cut the minimum wage, didn't create a single job. It certainly didn't help the environment, just hurt working people. So, you know, I know the Green slogan is, if you want green, vote green. If you want Fine Gael, you can vote green. If you want Fianna Fáil, you can also vote green. And I think at this stage, you know, what we need to do is we need to be clear about what we want. So Sinn Féin has set out our stall. We want to negotiate a programme for government that will deliver for our communities, that is a strong Republican agenda that will deliver for workers and families, and that will ensure that those people who have been left behind by any recovery actually get a chance to catch up.
Roisin mentioned the approach of a party and to certain issues. So if you look at Fine Gael's approach in the last year to climate and environmental issues, that cross-party committee was formed, led by Hildegard Nocton, my colleague, and now we have the Climate Action Plan, which even staunch environmentalists have said is a very ambitious plan. So there is a plan there that we lead it to, and we've across all departments it's been implemented. And even when we look at how we build,
so
that it will be
so you're stealing the green clothes, basically.
No.
People are good at that nowadays.
Pat, because it's in everyone's interest that the planet survives. But it's always very important that we interrogate any science behind slogans, because we will not get a chance to do this a second time.
Look, sustainable environmental policies have to be front and centre of
and
whatever government
front and
combination
centre.
There is. But I would make another point. You must have a just transition. You know, what we saw,
and
for example, in the budget.
And you know from reading the report, Roisin, that's a key part of the report.
I just want to make a point. You increased the carbon tax in the budget, mm-hmm. but you didn't have sufficient offsetting measures. The other point I'd make is that the key thing that households should be doing is insulating their homes. But the way the grant system works at the moment excludes people on low income.
Okay, we will pause here. And we will take a break right
fair.
Now.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With the Jaguar E-Pace. Beautiful by design and dynamic to drive. Delivering performance that is unmistakably Jaguar.
This is News Talk.
Some more of your comments. Read the argument that Sinn Féin is being guided and run by unknown people. What about Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil? Please don't try to tell me that bankers, developers, landlords, legal eagles, etc. don't create their agendas. That's from Deck in Stillorgan. Why do Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael keep knocking Sinn Féin? Methinks they're worried about a rising tide on the left. From Dermot. Another one. If Sinn Féin want to be considered a normal party, they need to permanently reject and denounce the provos. Leave the paramilitaries behind. They're playing on the innocence of younger voters who have no memory and little concept of the sinister movement that Sinn Féin fronts for. They are appealing to some romantic notions that these youngsters have of Irish republicanism. Louise, I mean, there is that kind of sanitising the party.
This election is about people looking forward and looking for their future. You know, people are going to be voting on the basis of policies that parties have. They're also going to be voting on the basis of engagement, which is what we're doing at the moment. And that's the great thing about an election, is it gives you the opportunity to have those, to interrogate your policies, to have those conversations on the doorsteps. And, you know, I mean, that caller is right to a certain extent. There is, you know, an appeal to younger voters from Sinn Féin, but that's because our party is offering them a future that they can believe in, a home that is affordable and secure, a job that doesn't have a zero-hour contract.
Are you trying to airbrush your history away?
That goes along with it. No, not at all. But what we are doing, though, is we're trying to fight this election on the basis of our policies at the moment. We're going out, we're talking to people, we are putting our stall out, the same as every party is. That's only
okay,
right. And people are hearing what we're saying, and that's why you're hearing that rising note of panic.
I think there's a lot of parties that would like to try and airbrush their history, and fairly recent history, too. Look, I think this is a really interesting election. The canvas is really interesting because people are getting very engaged.
Yeah.
You know, normally you would say, no, I'm voting this way or voting that way. People are saying, OK, so what are you proposing for the health service? Yeah. What are you proposing in relation to
it's
a this kind of
discussions
rat on the run that we're involved in, getting up first thing in the morning, shipping kids out, coming back after dark? There's a lot of people feeling that they're working, running very hard just to stand still. And really, you know, there was a time when if you had a decent job, you could afford a decent life. That doesn't apply any longer. And people are under enormous stress. That's why we're saying there is a need to look at the whole area of, you know, work-life balance. A lot of people feel that they're shortchanging their kids, they're shortchanging themselves. They don't have time to actually live properly. They're living to work. And I think that's a huge issue. And what people are looking for is solutions and not election promises, because, you know, and we're back into this territory now of auction politics. People are looking for honesty in politics, and they're looking for solutions.
It looks like, though, you want almost a Sláintecare document on every policy. You know, well, you're talking about health and Sláintecare sorting that out, but you could look to education, try and get cross-party support for education, look to housing, trying to get cross-party
but
support
why
for
is
housing.
It, why is it that, for example, Fine Gael are coming up now with what they're saying are solutions to some of the major problems? They've had their opportunity. They've been in government for nine years.
I think Roisin is right. It's a very engaged canvas. People really care about the future. And thank you, Louise, for plugging the Fine Gael slogan there on our behalf.
I feel like they have a future with Fine Gael.
We're all looking forward. We're all looking forward. But when I'm talking to people on the doors, they're very concerned about the larger issues. The idea that there's power sharing restored in Stormont.
Are they really?
Yes, they
the
are.
The polls in the Irish Times suggested that 3% put Brexit on the agenda.
I'm the one talking to people on doors, Pat. People are very concerned about Brexit. The recent comments about no regulatory alignment are very concerning.
Not a single person has raised Brexit with me on the canvas.
Excuse me, Roisin. So, and yes, like that, housing and health and all of those pressures are coming up. But people don't forget what happened in the past. It is very recent when we waved away our brothers and sisters to Australia. It is very, very recent in our minds when we had the Fianna Fáil government, cabinet ministers not knowing what was on, no collective responsibility for the future of the country. So this is fresh in people's minds. It's coming up in the doors. But as Louise said, we're all looking forward to a brighter future.
I'm going to just go back to a comment Louise made before the break there about, you know, when the Greens were in government with Fianna Fáil. I mean, we had six TDs, you know, in the whole government.
And
it was a small proportion.
Cut the minimum wage.
No, excuse me, I know, but you also said that we did nothing for the environment. I mean, that's absolute nonsense. You did.
I didn't say that.
You did.
I did not say that. I did not say that. What you did do, though, was you told us all to buy diesel cars.
No, excuse me, that was one thing. We introduced energy efficiency measures in homes. Interrogating the science in terms of diesel cars, we were told a lie in terms of
you
what.
You didn't interrogate the science.
We weren't.
And that's what happened.
The Green Party aren't a scientific interrogator.
You were told a lie and you fell for it. Well, look, I mean,
excuse me, every other. We were not the only party to fall for it.
Now,
we introduced a range of.
There was the one element of dropping the car tax for low emission cars, and the industry was doing it anyway. I put that point to you before, Pippa. And instead, what you did is you dropped car tax here for low emission cars. Even the luxury cars became low emission cars. Yeah. And the road tax, instead of being 1,000 for a 5 Series BMW, became 150.
Yeah. And the
Exchequer lost massive revenue.
Yes,
now, hip
hooray
for those
difference.
Who drive those cars.
Yeah.
But
no,
at the same time.
Yeah, no,
and that's what a just transition is about. It's, you know, not impoverishing low income families.
And that's where the just transition comes in as well. And in fact, the Green Party.
That's the balance we need, and we're not seeing it from you, Pippa.
Well, look, that time is well before I started getting involved in the Green Party. Yes. I'm involved about 3.5 to 4 years. Now, we were the party to introduce the Just Transition Bill in 2018. It's only now that Fine Gael have put in a Just Transition Commissioner. We still don't know what he's going to do. We still don't know how he's going to implement it. The plans are there in our bill and people should read them.
Okay, I want to go to Lisa because she's been listening at a disadvantage at the end of the telephone. Lisa, that whole question of Sinn Féin maybe stealing your Republican clothes. They want a border poll within 5 years. You guys don't.
Well, before you move on, just to pick up on a couple of points, because I am at a bit of a disadvantage. I'm not in the studio with everybody else, but you know, I'm not sure where Kate is canvassing that power sharing in the north and Brexit are coming up in the doors, but I've not had one single door in the last number of weeks where that's come up. The focus is very much on the health service and access. It's on housing, it's on cost of childcare, it's on crime, and in my own constituency in Mayo, Cleary, farming and rural development is a big issue. So it definitely the government may want to focus on the North and Brexit, but it's not a campaign issue. And I'm not sure who you accuse, Pat, of stealing the Greens' clothes, but just to make the point...
Stealing,
you know,
Republican clothes, I said, Sinn Féin, with the border
poll,
stealing your clothes.
I didn't get an opportunity to say something on the climate issue, but I would make the point that isn't it a good thing, and isn't it to be welcomed, that every party wants to play their part on the climate emergency and the climate issue. Nobody's doubting that the Green Party were the first to this. Clearly, that's the case. But it is a global issue. It is a national issue that we'd all have to work together on. And I think it's a positive thing that every party genuinely wants to play their role in terms of tackling that climate challenge. And I don't think that any party should seek to have a monopoly on that issue or be afraid to share that issue with others, because we're going to have to find a consensus in the country to deal with those very challenging matters.
Okay.
And
now,
for rural communities, they will need more help.
Lisa,
transition is more onerous
on
rural
party,
communities.
Your party in government might have to nail its colours to the mast and choose between, you know, the farmers, who many of whom are not into the green agenda, and the Greens. I mean, that could be a very difficult policy negotiation between Fianna Fáil and the Greens, not to alienate your rural base.
Well, I don't agree, Pat, that you would pitch the farming community against people that want to tackle climate issues. The point I was making that it is more onerous on rural communities. Agriculture in the west of Ireland is a big sector, it's a big employer, and it's really important to our local economy. We don't have public transport, so we do rely on our cars, many of them diesel because of old policies. So we are very much ready to meet that challenge and to do our part, but we're going to need help, okay. And we're going to need help financially.
Now, in the last couple
of minutes that we need to have.
In the last couple of minutes we have, I want to talk about auction politics, because it does seem to be in this election alive and well. I'll stay with you, Lisa, just briefly on this, because we have only a couple of minutes left. The business of the SSIAs, save €3, get one, won't be coming in except for over a period of 5 years. You know, there's a lot of stuff being offered that's going to cost a lot of money by all the parties, and people are seeing the spectre of that old promises, promises, promises again.
Well, we're in the middle of a campaign, and people want to know what the incoming government, and I hope that it'll be a Fianna Fáil government, are going to do in relation to housing. So I think it's proper and it's right that we would outline our housing policy.
Yeah, and the law and of unintended consequences about people saying, well, I'm not buying, I was going to buy, I'm not going to buy for another few years because Fianna Fáil might give me some state money. You know, the people who are planning to build houses might say, well, this is very uncertain now. We're in a stasis once again. Owen Murphy was criticised again and again for changing the rules on high-rise and causing chaos in the building area. So this kind of policy could also cause chaos in building uncertainty, which people don't like.
I don't think so, but Owen Murphy has been criticised for a lot of things in housing, and I do think he's failed in his brief, but that's a different matter. We know that one of the big problems for younger people, particularly people in their 30s and 40s now, my own generation, is that they cannot save for a deposit because they're paying huge colossal
rent.
Okay, and
Leo Varadkar said last night, if you can't save, it doesn't matter, you know, you're not going to get the one extra euro.
Absolutely. If you've no money, you've no money.
Pat, if I can finish the point I was making, I will deal with that matter. People can save something, but it's taking literally years to get that deposit together. What this will do is speed up the deposit saving process. So for every €3, you get topped up by 1 euro.
We know the detail, so but it's not happening
deposit,
immediately.
You could do
auction politics, Roisin.
Yeah, absolutely. I heard you discussing with Dara O'Brien yesterday about this proposal, offering people, again, trying to buy votes, offering people this SSIA scheme plus the Help to Buy scheme. Look, this is fantasy stuff. What we need to do in relation to housing is drive down the cost of housing. There are plenty of examples where you can have affordable housing built on public land. That's what we need to do, not subsidise inflated house prices.
So while Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael were agreeing their budgets for the last 4 years, Sinn Féin were working on real credible alternatives, fully costed by the Department of Finance. We want to see the largest state building programme of housing that the state has ever seen. That is what is needed. Our spokesperson, Eoin O'Brien, has put that forward
on
many
occasions.
And he was on this
programme at great length
and
the other
indeed,
morning.
But okay. Those are our policies, because what people deserve is a decent and secure home. They won't get it under Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil.
I think this SSIA notion is just classic Fianna Fáil, going mad with the chequebook, buying votes. It really is, to my mind, classic inability to plan for the future on Fianna Fáil. And it's good, actually, that they've come out with this ridiculous policy, because it might actually be stark enough to remind people of the reckless attitude they've had to our economy and our money.
Yeah, and I think, look, yeah, again, buying votes, I mean, all the parties are going to promise everyone, apart from us, actually, the sun, moon and stars. You know, we're promising people a better future on this earth. And that has to be, that is central to our policies, and we will bring everyone with us, and we, you know, for a brighter future. And it's about our kids and our grandchildren. And we can talk about, you know, 2 weeks and 3 weeks and years at a time. We have to be looking a decade of change, and that's what we need to
have. We have to leave it there. Kate O'Connell of Fine Gael, Roisin Shortall of the Social Democrats, Louise O'Reilly of Sinn Féin, Lisa Chambers of Fianna Fáil, and Senator Pippa Hackett of the Green Party. Thank you all. We did invite Lisa, by the way, to come to studio, but we understand that she, you know, Mayo is her constituency. It's a long, long way from Diggs Lane. So we understand that is why she's at a remove. Lots of texts and tweets coming in asking about childcare and USC, the arts and so on. No time to get to all of that today, but we will be discussing these areas with other members of the various parties over the coming weeks. But to our panel, thank you very much.